If I could talk to the animals, just imagine it, chatting with a chimp and chimpanzee. Imagine talking to
Welcome back to Saturday Splash here on 94.5 WGTK The Answer. And while we can't talk directly to the answers, we've got the next best thing here. We've got Dr. Nick Kapustin, Deputy Zoo Administrator and Head Veterinarian for the Greenville Zoo. Hello, Dr. Nick.
Hello.
Before the break, we were talking about the research that Greenville Zoo does on black rat snakes. I wanted to ask just briefly about how zoos use genetics in their research, because I think maybe a lot of people don't know that. A lot of zoos actually focus their research on genetics and increasing biodiversity and documenting biodiversity, because the more biodiversity you have, the healthier your ecosystem is. So talk to us about biodiversity, genetics, and zoos.
Okay. Well, it's very important both in a zoo setting as well as in free-ranging animals. And what we do in our management of the animals that we have at our zoo and at other zoos, we participate in breeding programs and population management programs for particular species and make decisions on which animals are to reproduce and produce offspring based on how diverse their genetics are in efforts to avoid inbreeding, avoiding health problems that could result from that. So there's that occurs, and that's a factor in making those decisions. And for example, why we have Miles the giraffe now for our herd.
And that's why we sent Kiko somewhere else.
Well, we sent Kiko for that purpose. Mm-hmm. And so we received Miles, and Tatu, who is Autumn's youngster, will go to another zoo just for that purpose as well. And those decisions are made based on how variable genetics are in that population. We will follow and do follow those recommendations through the species survival plan. Other zoos certainly have a larger magnitude, like the San Diego Zoo, the Bronx Zoo, and such. They have a lot of laboratory facilities where they can actually study genetic information from the animals that are in their collection as well as in other collections. And at other facilities I've been involved with, we've sent samples to them. The Greenville Zoo has sent some samples to them too, I'm sure, over the years. Like I said, I'm here since January, so trying to get up to speed on all the different things that we've done historically. And they'll assess the genetics of particular species and learn more about those animals. They also have a genetic bank of cells in both reproductive tissue that can be used in both a research setting and potentially a reproductive setting with artificial reproductive technologies. And then a lot of the genetics that are being studied in a zoo setting, especially the laboratory, those are oftentimes, those findings can be applied to free-ranging species. And so actually that's another benefit of having animals you can sample on a great frequency. You can use the blood and other genetic data to analyze, and that helps actually interpret and help with some of the population management of free-ranging species, those animals out in the wild, those that are severely endangered. And when the numbers are low, it's the same as a zoo setting where you have very little genetic diversity. Unfortunately, you don't have a dense genetic base to work with, and then you'd end up with some health problems.
So, yeah, that's right. The smaller your population, the smaller your genetic pool, and the more inbreeding you get, the more health problems you get. And ultimately, that can lead to the destruction of a species if there are not many left.
So yeah, it'd be
good,
like...
Good job with the genes.
Yeah, it'd be like brothers and sisters having babies all over the place, and then, yeah.
Yeah, not
down
good
the
for
way
species
be bad.
Survival.
Okay,
no,
yeah.
So let me ask then about successful reintroduction programs. Has the zoo, Greenville Zoo, participated in any, or can you cite any, you said the species survival plan. So how have zoos played a role in reintroducing species?
We at the Greenville Zoo have not had an opportunity, to my knowledge, at least that I'm aware of, contributing to a reintroduction effort. Honestly, that's somewhat of a misnomer and a misunderstanding, where the public has a perception that a lot of animals are bred in a zoo setting and they're released into the wild. Unfortunately, that's a really complicated process, and doing that isn't necessarily in the best interests of the population or even the individual animals. But there have been just a handful of really good successes. Probably two that come to mind are the black-footed ferret program out west that they identified at one point they removed only 18 individuals from the free-ranging population. That was about all they could find. And there was a concerted effort through the United States Fish and Wildlife Service and a handful of zoos to breed animals or breed the ferrets in a captive setting and do it so that they could then release them into the wild. And it finally is making a difference. It's a very involved process, controlling disease potential and so forth, but and also having to head start the youngsters out in sort of a getting acquainted pen before they get released out into the wild. The other is the Puerto Rican crested toad that is a toad species in Puerto Rico that's highly endangered. It is part of a species survival plan. We don't have any Puerto Rican crested toads at our zoo, but I've had a good fortune to participate in the program at other facilities. And what occurs is the toads are bred, and they, just like toads, will produce eggs. They'll produce a lot of offspring, and they will produce a lot of tadpoles at one time. And then those tadpoles are actually transported to Puerto Rico from a zoo in the United States and released in Puerto Rico by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And, great success.
And one little side note to that, that is one of those things that you just don't know until you investigate. The program, when it first started, they were releasing tiny toadlets, those little guys that morph out. They're not tadpoles anymore, but they just got their four legs. They released them and realized none of those individuals were at all out there as adults. That they did genetic analyses and DNA fingerprinting and saw none of those genetics were passed. And after looking at the species' natural history, which is key to understanding anything regarding an animal, they realized that what happened is those toadlets, or the toad in general, when it comes to breed, it goes to what's called the natal pond. That's where that tadpole becomes an adult and loses its tadpolishness, if that's the right word.
Yeah,
that's
scientifically word. Accurate.
That's
yeah, science.
That's to where it gets the four legs. And where it metamorphosizes that way, that's where they return to breed. So what happened was they released these toadlets that actually morphed in Philadelphia, Jacksonville, wherever, and they don't have
they
a plane ticket.
Yeah,
Philly. They don't have a plane yeah. ticket to travel back to reproduce. So that's
it's a
what
long
happened.
Way to swim.
It
and
is
expensive.
For a tadpole.
So once they made that distinction and realized we just have to release tadpoles, the program blossomed, and it is one of the more successful reintroduction efforts.
That's really great. Cool.
Yeah. Okay. So your zoo animals, where do they come from? You just go to the wild, grab a bag, and just pick what you want?
No, that's not quite we do.
All right. Okay, good. I feel better.
No. It's quite a responsible process. And in the old days of when zoos first began in the United States, sure, that was one of the practices they had because there really was not much of an awareness of sustainability and ecosystem health and so forth. Basically, all the animals that we receive are, the majority are captive born in a zoo setting. And so we will acquire them from other zoos. A lot of the decisions are made through those management plans, like I said, the SSPs, where we'll receive an animal from another zoo, and they are all captive born, so they're not at all out from the wild, and they don't have any other than their instincts. They
you're
don't have an awareness.
Not removing them from the population.
No.
You're not decreasing the numbers. You're not ruining the genetic pool. These are all born and raised in captivity.
Right.
Cool.
And on a rare instance, do animals come in from the wild? But if that's the case, there's a lot of government regulations, and they want to make sure that you are doing it responsibly and are not impacting that population. And the majority of those animals that happen to be brought in from the wild, oftentimes they have been in some type of a rehabilitation setting or are in human care where they're taken from the wild illegally, and they can't release them. So the only effort can be put into putting them into some type of a sustainable captive environment where it's positive for them.
And since they, a lot of those animals, I would say probably since they've had that human interaction, they could never go back out into the wild in any case.
Right. Right. And that's key. Like we talked about the introduction programs, is most programs, unfortunately, can't hide the human element. There's efforts that are done, and sometimes it, with bird releases, Indian or California condor, they literally have puppets that they create to feed the youngsters, so they think they're getting food from an adult condor. There's a lot of efforts that are put into place. When you're dealing with carnivores, for example, wolves or big cats, they're so sophisticated and the environment is so challenging to try to mimic it so you're not habituating them to people. It's literally impossible to do so. So
I think about that. My cats are so smart. And they're only little cats. The big cats must be really smart. Yes. Super smart.
Meow.
Meow. Yeah. So big cats at the Greenville Zoo, we've got lions and the Amur leopards. Who cooperated with me.
And ocelot. Don't forget.
Oh, that's right. The ocelot. And we have red pandas, but we do not have the giant pandas. Now, I read something about the giant pandas where people who go to the panda refuge in China and everything, they actually have to put panda costumes on to reduce that human element. I don't know. That sounded a little sketchy. I think the pandas are smarter than that.
It's depending on the costume. I think they may be able to at least minimize that kind of an impact. I'd have to see the costume to get.
Oh yeah.
To guess. Right. I saw some at Boo in the Zoo, and
they were good.
Some of the animal costumes that they had were pretty lifelike, so they could be used out in the field potentially.
Good. All right. Real quick, let me just ask you: pandas, are we going to save them? Is it worth it?
Yes, it's good. Worth it.
Good. I think
they're
so
cute.
Too.
They're
so too.
Yeah, they're a nice. Well, they're an intricate part of the environment and ecosystem, and so saving a panda saves a leopard and saves other Asiatic species. So it's all interconnected.
But we do have red pandas. So go to the zoo and visit with the red pandas. They're very, very cool and cute too. Great. Not just those giant pandas.
You're listening to the Saturday Splash here on 94.5 WGTK The Answer. After this, we'll be back with Dr. Nick from the Greenville Zoo, and we will be talking about animals. You're listening to the Saturday Splash. A wing, 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 a wing,